Now, who would want to go to Transylvania and rummage around Dracula's castle? Well, David Schrader would be one. Joshua P. Warren would be the other. We'll talk with both of them about this trip in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our special guest tonight, David Schrader. He hosts Darkness Radio, and you can get more information on that at his website, darknessradio.com. Now, David, I understand you're going on a trip to Transylvania. Joshua P. Warren, when he was on with me a month or so ago, mentioned this trip and that you were going to come along with him. We're going to bring Joshua on with you right now. David, why would you want to go to Transylvania?
George, I am so psyched about this trip. I have, first of all, I've never been out of the country except for Canada, which I know is out of the country, but literally both trips to Canada have been over the border and directly back. So I feel cheated. I want to go somewhere fun. And Joshua said, Dave, if we're going to go somewhere and we're going to investigate the paranormal, let's make it a doozy. And he put together this Transylvania trip for us and listeners of both of our radio shows.
Let's bring in Joshua P. Warren. Josh, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. And just like Dave said, I am psyched.
How did this thing come about?
Well, you know, I have put together various expeditions over the years. And I have a wonderful travel agent that I work with who is a paranormal enthusiast. And she understands that we don't just want to go places and walk around like any other tourist. We actually want some special access so that we can bring in equipment, do investigations. And she contacted me and said, you know, I have an opportunity right now to set up a trip to go to Romania for at least a week. But it's not going to be easy because, I mean, for one thing, most of the people there probably are not that well-versed in English. There is a big time difference. There are all kinds of cultural idiosyncrasies. And so she had to work very hard to put this rare trip together. But once she gave me a rough itinerary, as it turned out, I was in California at the time with Dave because we were, we had been shooting one of the Paranormal Challenge episodes, and immediately I said, Dave, we've got to do this together, because Dave is not only a good friend of mine, but he is uniquely qualified for this kind of trip. Would you like me to tell you why?
Yes, go ahead. Does he want us to know why?
Dave doesn't know what I'm going to say. You see, we have a lot in common, you know, radio host. We are explorers. We go out and investigate things. As you can see from the picture at coasttocoastam.com, we're both dashingly handsome. On a more serious note.
The guy on the left or the right's better looking than the other. I'm not sure.
We both are bald in that picture, but,
you guys look like, Aykroyd and Belushi, you know?
You should have seen what was out of the frame. That's where we kept our proton packs. But you see, one thing that has really always captured my imagination about Dave's penchant as an explorer and researcher relates to something about this part of the world. You see, for centuries, it has been widely believed in that part of Europe that the spiritual realm is usually invisible, that maybe certain people can see these spiritual beings at certain times, but most of us cannot. And so the old school way of trying to gauge whether or not some being you encountered might be supernatural was to try to get it in front of a mirror. And of course, if it did not cast a reflection like the traditional vampire, well, then, you know, that chill ran down your spine and you realized I'm looking at something here that might not have a human soul. Now, in that same way, it has often been recounted that when ghosts are seen, like the Brown Lady of Raynham Hall in England, or even many of the spirits here in Asheville, North Carolina, where I live, the apparition has no eyeballs. It might look completely tangible otherwise, but when you see it up close, you find these black, empty sockets. And, of course, we've always had this sort of belief floating around that the eyes are the windows to the soul. Mm-hmm. And I've never been quite sure what to make of that. And yet one of the things that Dave has studied that I know you're going to get into tonight is this phenomenon of the black-eyed children, which is a very obscure, strange, and truly spooky phenomenon. And I don't know anybody else who has looked into these cases as much as Dave. And so I felt that aside from all his given credentials here, that going to a place where these soulless beings are seen that often don't cast reflections, that don't have eyeballs, would be appropriate for a guy who studies this thing called the black-eyed children.
David, we're going to get into that a little bit later on. So you're psyched for this trip. Josh is psyched for this trip. What do you two think you're going to stumble across?
Well, you know, that's the beauty of it. Having never been out of the country and never having had this opportunity to before, and you know, maybe going to a country that isn't so technologically wrapped up into things as we are here in the United States, I'm looking more forward to the experience of the people from that area, finding out the legend and lore from their perspective, and we're going to have a few people there with us that can translate. So I'm psyched about the history and just getting a chance to hear from these people that live in this area and find out more about, you know, what is fact or fiction to them, and where does that take us? And we're going along with, I think, about 50 of our listeners that are going to be attending this event with us.
Well, that's fantastic. So do you think you're going to stumble across the spirit, Josh, of Vlad the Impaler?
The more I am preparing for this trip, the more I am starting to take all of this very seriously, because now that word has gotten out that I'm going to do this and people know the type of scientific approach I try to apply, more and more people are coming forth and telling me about experiences they have had. And one guy in particular is a friend of mine who resides in Holland, but he's a sort of a world traveler. He comes into this country at least once or twice a year and visits. And he has been there, and this is a guy that I've known long enough to trust, and he has told me that of all the places he has ever visited, that particular spot, in fact, there are several castles that Dracula had, but there is one castle in particular that we're going to, where Vlad used to have a sort of wooden beam structure that he would hang people from as he was dining, and when he would sit there dining, he would treat them sort of like spouts, if you will. He would drain and drip their blood as a sauce into his meal. And I think he did things like that because he wanted to have this sort of terrifying reputation, which, of course, was effective psychologically as much then as it would be now. And my friend said that he stepped onto that spot, and he was overcome by this absolute terror that he had not felt since he was a child having a nightmare. And that as a grown man, he could not explain it, but that he just had to leave. He had to get out of there. And other people, of course, actually saw apparitions there. And so the more I look into these kinds of experiences and anticipate what we might be able to measure, in addition to the fact that I do have people telling me, hey, it doesn't matter if you believe in vampires. There are people there who believe they are vampires, who believe they are werewolves, and they might attack you just to make a point that they don't like you snooping around. And so, you know, I can half jokingly and half seriously saying that, you know, I've been brushing up on my knowledge of how to physically fight some of these figures that we might come into contact with. And as you can see, Dave's a big, tough guy, so he and I might find ourselves in the middle of some kind of horror movie out there, having to fight our way back to freedom.
Well, you know our deal. You and David are going to check in with me while you're out there, okay?
I hope so. As long as we can get a signal, you might have one of those broken, staticky conversations that ends with a scream, but at least then it'll be good radio.
You'll sound like a EVP sound yourself, Josh.
That's right.
Okay, any parting words here for David before we let you go?
David, great job tonight. Fascinating stories. I'm hearing stuff about you that even I did not know, so... You know, when Dave and I get together, I think that there is this synchronistic ability for some very odd things to happen. So, my friend, this will be probably the last time we get to talk on Coast before 2012 kicks in, and I think the next time we come back on together, we're going to blow some minds.
That's right. Thank you, Josh. I look forward to seeing you out in May.
You got it.
All right. He's a great guy. Good researcher, David. He's one of the best, isn't he?
Oh, definitely.
Let's talk just for a moment before we get into Angels, then, what he mentioned that you've been looking at, the phenomenon of the black-eyed kids. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, this was actually introduced to us a little earlier this year when we had a guest on our show, Jason Offit, who had brought the story to us, and it had shared one or two stories that he had heard. And I guess one of the first ones was actually a newspaper reporter that had been approached by two of these black-eyed kids when he was in his car. And the black-eyed kids are just as they sound. They're teenagers to young children that have jet black eyes. There's no iris. It's completely black. And the stories have been very intriguing to me, and it seems to have struck a chord. And through the year here on Darkness Radio, we've had entire shows based on stories from our listeners that have had these run-ins and encounters. And at first I wondered, because kind of researching, really the only stories we could find went back to about 1998 at about the farthest. And I thought maybe this was just a new urban legend that was beginning to spawn and you know, creating this new storyline like a Bloody Mary. And, you know, I was very intrigued to see where this would progress. So as we talked, I started finding more and more stories from people from all around the world. Thank you to the internet for being able to download podcasts of our show after they air. We have a great worldwide audience that tunes in, and they've been sharing these stories. And I guess this is not just a regional or a national event. It's happening all over. Actually, one of the stories that we collected, one of the oldest ones, was from around the 50s. A lady had said she was listening to our show. Her mother's from Korea, and she told her mother of the story, and her mother related this story back. That, you know, of course, the family used to sleep in a general room. They would have mats on the floor, and they would all sleep in the same room together. And her mother, as a child, woke up one night and saw her own brother standing in the door beckoning her to come out and play. And she said, "But we'll get in trouble, brother." And he said, "No, come, let's go play. Let's go play." And as she stood up to go play with him, she tripped and looked down, and there on the floor, lo and behold, was her brother. And she looked back at the door, and here is the visage of her brother, who is sleeping at her feet, smiling and beckoning for her to go outside. Mm-hmm. She turned around and scrambled back underneath the covers and began to shiver and cry, and she could feel him walking in the room and patting on the mat, trying to find her. And she let out a scream, which woke up her parents, and that really unnerved the entire family. And other children and other people in their community had similar experiences. So that one was one of the older stories that I've had the opportunity to hear. But usually they seem to be in packs of two or three. And George, kind of following in the vein of the vampiric tradition, they are trying to solicit to get into your home or get into your car. And they want you to, or follow them. And some of the other stories that we've gotten that were just bone-chilling to me, I had a couple who wrote to me right after our first talk with Jason and said one of the stories that they had gotten married, and I off the top of my head, I want to say it was like the Bahamas, somewhere in the Caribbean perhaps, and they were at a nice all-inclusive resort, and they were walking down the beach together at night at sunset, and they'd been walking and talking for a while when they noticed that there was a young girl up ahead on the beach, and she was wearing what looked like a white nightgown. And that's what most of these kids wear, are very bland outfits. I would almost say Amish looking in nature. Mm-hmm. You know, no real detail, no Nike swoosh or Reebok or no logos that would be noticeable. But they saw this girl and she was saying, "Please, please, I need your help." And they began following her down the beach, and she would beckon for them to keep following. And as they followed her down, she got to a pier and she turned and began to walk into the water. And that's when the alarms really started to sound for this couple. And they thought, "Wait a minute, this is getting weird." And they stopped. They said, "Well, hold on, we're going to go get help. You just wait here. We'll be right back." And as she started to walk out of the water, that's when the moonlight caught her eyes, and they noticed that they were jet black. And she kept beckoning, "No, please, I need your help." And the couple just took off back down the beach. The parts that unnerved them was they realized how far they had walked. They thought they were only walking for, you know, 30 seconds following her down the beach. And right. They realized they were a good half mile away from the resort at this point. And at that point, as they're moving back up the beach, they look down, and in the sand, they realize that there's only their set of footprints that they were following. So what did this child want from them? What was the idea? What are they trying to do?
What do they want?
That's the unnerving thing. We don't know yet. And there have been a few stories now that have trickled in of people that had inadvertently let them in. But once they realize that the children have these black eyes and have this kind of sense of dread and foreboding that seems to be around them, they quickly exit their own home and have returned with friends later to find the place empty. But we've had, you know, like I said, for the most part, they want to get in, and they'll repeat lines like, please let us in. We want to use your phone. Could we?
And how many are together most of the time, David?
And it can be as few as one, but for the most part, they seem to be traveling in groups of two or three.
Okay.
And they're, like I said, their inclination is to try to get into your home or get you to come with them somewhere. A few of the other unnerving stories that we've had shared over the last year here, we had actually a couple in Minnesota who just wrote to me from Eagan, and Eagan, Minnesota. They the lady had come home to find two kids out on her porch that were bending down by her patio door playing with her cat through the window. And she thought it was kind of strange, but she went into the house and she heard a rapping on the window, and she went back, and that's when she saw the black eyes. And they were asking to come in and could they use her phone. And she said, no, you need to leave. And they said, we need to come in. And she said, no, I don't know you. You need to go home. And
Jeez.
She shut the blinds and shades on them. And they continued to rap at the window for quite a while, trying to get in and trying to get her attention. But
unnerving. How tall are they?
I'm sorry?
How tall are they?
Usually, you know, the cases I've been hearing, they range in age from about 8 years old to about 14 or 15. So I think there's a pretty good swing in the size and age of these kids. But none of them are, none of them are very descriptive. There's nothing that would stand out aside from the black eyes. It's not like they're, you know, portly children or redheads or anything. It's always very nondescript children that just, they have this unnerving feeling. And people say that they almost have this hypnotic or strange sense about them. They feel intrigued, like they want to open the door or they want to let the people in and let the kids in, and they just can't do it, and because the fear and the dread start to build up in them so much. Well, of course, I love children. I've got seven of my own, and I'm first to join in if there's ever anybody that needs help for children, raising money or anything for a charity. But I tell you what, George, if I open the door to two or three ragamuffins standing out there with black eyes, the door's going shut, and I'm chaining the door myself.
I don't blame you.
I've got a certain line. I would say probably one of the most terrifying of the stories I've heard so far was another story that took place this spring, summer in Minneapolis. Older couple that listened to our show on a regular basis. She said that she had been listening to the show on the Black Eyed Kids, and it was really unnerving to her. And one night during the summer here, it had been raining pretty much nonstop for a few weeks in Minnesota. It's about 10 o'clock at night, and she and her husband heard what sounded like kids laughing and running around in the front yard. And she got very uncomfortable feeling. They looked out, they didn't see any kids, and they thought, well, who would let their kids out at this time of night?
Yeah.
But again, it's Minnesota, it's been crummy weather. They really, you know, not a whole lot to do, so maybe they were just letting the kids out to burn off a little energy at night before bed. And she retired to bed that night, and about 2 or 3 in the morning awoke to find three children standing in her room. And as she started to open her mouth to scream, she said first she remembers listening to our show, and she's heard about the hypnagogic and hypnopompic states of when you're coming in and out of sleep, how you that moment when sleep and fantasy and reality can kind of blend together. So she said she closed her eyes and took a deep breath, expecting to open her eyes and have these children gone. When she opened her eyes, there they were, still standing at her bedside. And she began to scream. She reached over for her husband and opened her mouth, and the one in the middle stepped forward and put its fingers to its lips and said, "Shh, we just want to look at you." And that's when she let go with a holler. The husband woke up, lights went on, and the children vanished.
We just want to look at you. David, we're going to come right back and talk about these angel encounters and some shadow people work that you've done as well. Much more to come. David Schrader, our special guest. During the last hour of the program, of course, we'll take some of your paranormal stories and questions for David. We'll be right back. Okay, next hour, we'll take your phone calls and stories with David Schrader as we talk about the paranormal side of the world. When we come right back, let's talk about some of the angelic encounters. That'll be next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with David Schrader. David, if you talk about angels, you have to talk about demons. What have you experienced?
Oh, this is where it starts getting weird, right?
You got it.
You know, if I could mention one thing and ask the help from you and from your listeners, George, before we launch into this. One thing that we've always done on our show for the last 6 years is we've taken prayer and healing requests for our listeners. And right now, Father Andrew Calder, who is a demonologist, religious demonologist, and exorcist, and has aided in many different cases and has never turned a child away or anybody that's needed help, is in a struggle for his life, and went in earlier this summer having all types of medical issues, and he is, still in the hospital, I think going on 5 months now, dealing with medical issue after medical issue and major infections, and right now is suffering from pneumonia. We lost him briefly this week. His heart stopped for 4 to 6 minutes. They were able to revive him and bring him back. But if I could just ask for the people that work in the light and energy and healing, and for those prayer warriors out there, if you could please keep Father Andrew Calder in your prayers and thoughts, it would be greatly appreciated. And for those of you that are fans of the TV series Paranormal State, he is the priest that worked in the IM6 case. But he's a wonderful man with a great heart, and it would be a true tragedy to lose somebody that is such a great warrior in the fight. So please keep Father Andrew Calder in your prayers and thoughts.
Okay, very good.
Dealing with demons, now, you know, I have a lot of people, and, you know, we do live events all over the United States, George, with listeners of our show and fans of the different paranormal TV shows, and everybody's always afraid of demons, and are they going to get a demonic attachment? And I'm one that subscribes to the fact I do believe that demons exist. I don't think they're in every cabinet, and I don't think they're out mucking with us on a daily basis. I think that what we put into things happens, and if you're so vexed and terrified of it, that things may occur to you more because of your fear. I try to tell people, and, you know, because you have things that happen to you, grandma's favorite plate shattered, or, you know, you heard knocking in your wall, does not mean that you are dealing with a demon. I'm 100% confident if you're dealing with a demon, you won't have to wonder if you're dealing with a demon. You will know it.
You'll know it right away.
Right.
You?
And I've laughed at some of the ideas, you know, I mean, one of the things that makes me laugh, George, and to try to put listeners at ease, you know, we hear about threes, when things come in threes, and, you know, I was awoken in the middle of the night to the banging in my walls, and it was boom, boom, boom. Well, you know, notice if it's at the same time, and did it happen to correspond with the water softener kicking on and, you know, doing something? Was there something that took place in your house that maybe the heater goes on every time that night, or was there something along those lines? The banging of the three has become, well, you know, that's them mocking the Holy Trinity, because at 3 o'clock in the afternoon is when Christ died, and at 3 in the morning is the anti-hour, and that's when the demons play. You know, I tell people, when you hear the knocking in three, think about it just right now for listeners that are not driving. Close your eyes and imagine walking up to your friend's house and now reaching out and knocking on that door. How do you do it? Almost all of us rap in threes.
Sure.
I think that's just a natural case. You know, that's a way people grab our attention when you see signs, live, 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 girls, girls, girls. Everything is in threes to grab our attention and make it noticeable. I just think knocking in threes is a natural progression. I don't think you have to necessarily jump to the fact that it's a demon or something evil. Does that mean that they don't exist? No, I believe they're out there, and I've seen the evil that men do and the evil that is out there in the supernatural world. But, you know, I go on investigations all the time and go to some of the most creepy places on the planet, and I'm proud to say I've never had anything attached to me or, you know, rain down hell in my life. And it's because I do have a strong faith in my Christianity and belief, and, I don't go into these things unprotected. I go in to investigate and to make communication if the other side is there and wants to make it, but I don't allow things to take control of me. I don't allow things to use my energy or to speak through me. I try to keep it very businesslike when I do an investigation, and that's helped me a lot. And I've watched people that go in and, you know, tell spirits, you can come home with me, and then things start to go really bad for them quickly, and giving permission to these things that we can't see. That's when I'm more concerned. And like you said, you know, if you believe in angels, you've got to believe in the other side. And I think that there is a very strong presence of angelic interference in our world. And, you know, you talked about the shadow people. A lot of people jump to the conclusion that shadow people are evil because they're dark, you know, this innocuous figure in our room. And I've actually come to understand, and from people I've talked to and interviewed, how many of the people that are not really frightened by it, they're more startled by something standing in their room, but they almost feel like it's always there. And I wonder if, A, shadow people are nothing more than spirits that just cannot manifest fully. This is just all the energy that they have. Or B, if there's this, you know, we've heard about watchers in different religions, and some people call them guardian angels. You know, maybe that's their role to watch over us at night and protect us. I mean, when you think about it, George, how many people have shared that story about waking up in the middle of the night to a bang that they can't find, but they turn on the light?
Yeah, or I wake up sometimes, I hear a doorbell ringing. There is no doorbell ringing, but
right.
but I hear it.
But what we don't see on the other side is that moment that we turned on the light to see what that noise was, maybe at that moment somebody was outside our window attempting to break in, and that was our guardian's attempt to wake us up and hit that light to turn off and turn away what might have been trying to bother us. You know, I think that there's more to that than it always being evil. There are some cases in Annie Wilder's book, The House of Spirits and Whispers, who we've had on our show. She tells of a very dark, creepy creature, a shadow man that would be in her room. And she tells in one of the stories, and it is one of the most chilling books I've ever read, he climbs into bed and she could feel his tongue go into her ear. And that, of course, then you've got something that's a totally different fit. But these shadows that we see, and people report that they see shadow figures in their rooms at night, I don't always think that people need to jump to the dark side. I don't think they have to make that natural leap that there's something evil. Like I said, I firmly believe if you're dealing with something dark, you will know. You will not question. You will not wonder. You will know that you are dealing with something on the dark side.
Let's talk about the angelic side for a second, too. Is it stronger than the dark side?
I believe it is. And I'll tell a quick story. When my son was born, my oldest son, Clifford, who is now 23 years old, he was born at home and with a midwife present. My mom and family, close friends and family were there. And I had just had knee surgery the month before my son was born. When we were at home giving birth, it turned out that he was going to be breech. So the midwife, Karen, had said, we're going to use gravity to get this baby out fast and safe. And by gravity, she meant we're going to stand up and you're going to stand there like a goalpost, and Vicky is going to put her back against your chest, her arms draped over your arms, and she's going to drop her weight and push this baby out. We're going to use gravity to pull this baby out quickly. So we got into a really good rhythm of I would lock down as she would go into a contraction, and then she would relax and I could relax for a second and then lock down before she would go into the next one. Well, we came out of one contraction, a massive contraction, and I went to relax and she dropped into another contraction. And I began to fall backwards, holding a 9-month pregnant woman. And I got to probably a 45-degree pitch before I stopped. And in front of a room full of people, stood back up on my own. And I felt, George, what felt like hands underneath my armpit grab me on both sides. And again, it was this warm vibrational feel, and it grabbed me and it lifted me straight back up. Now, after the baby was born, and thankfully he was safe, and he's a wonderful son now who's married and living good, his own life and serving our country in the Navy, he was great. But afterwards, my mom came to me, and she works for Shriners Children's Hospital in Chicago. And she knows how the back works. And she said, David, how did you stand back up when you began to fall? And I said, well, Mom, you know, I've watched The Incredible Hulk. Obviously, I just hulked out. And, you know, to save my woman and my baby, I was able to vex into that strength and stand back up. And she said, no, honey, that's not how the body works. Your back was bending and you were carrying a 9-month pregnant woman. She goes, it looked like somebody lifted you and set you back on your feet. And then she said, did you smell anything strange afterwards? And, George, I got to laugh because I was holding a pregnant woman giving birth. There was a lot of strange smells that night. And I said, well, what in particular? And she said, there was a very strong lilac smell. And I said, yeah, I did smell that, but I just assumed maybe somebody had knocked over some perfume on the counter in the bedroom.
Sure.
She goes, no, that was your grandmother's perfume.
There again, isn't she?
Right. And I walked down into the living room, and my aunt came up to me and asked me the same set of questions and then said, did you smell grandma's perfume? And so here was the shared experience, not just between the three of us, but all the people who were there smelled that lilac perfume and had that moment. So I've always considered that to be the second visitation of my grandmother. until the next experience I had, which was a full-on encounter with an angel. And I had some amazing things explained to me. And do we have time before a break here?
We sure do.
Okay.
We're going right up to the top.
Great. We talked earlier in the show, George, about lucid dreams. And we talked about how, and you talked about this on Darkness Radio earlier this evening, how you believe that that's an easier way for spirits to make themselves known to us.
Yes, it's a great way to communicate.
Right, it's in that plane between, reality and fantasy. It's in that plane between sleep and awake when your brain is more open and susceptible to this, and we're in that brainwave pattern that just allows those things to happen. And when we have those lucid dreams, those dream visitations, they're more real than some memories of our own. Well, I had a very dark time in my life, and this was a few years ago, just a lot of bad things, some health issues, things were just going wrong, and I was in a very dark place, and I had a visitation dream, and it is so unbelievably clear to me to this day, and it is one of the more profound moments of my life. I, in this dream, walked into a diner down in Minneapolis, Mickey's Diner, if you're familiar with that, and there, sitting at a table, was this beat up, broken old man. He looked like a character from the Dick Tracy cartoons, with the little newsboy cap on and the craggled old face.
A caricature of himself, huh?
Right. And when I walked in, he said, "Sit down." And I sat down, and he said, "We need to talk." And I said, "Okay." And he said, "What I'm about to tell you, you need to take forth and you need to tell people." And I said, "All right, what's going on?" And he said, "Something you need to know about angels. People have it wrong. They're not these glorious, beautiful, feminine-looking creatures." He goes, "Angels are hard, bent, battered. We fight on your behalf daily to protect you, to watch over you, fight the battles that you don't even know you're in some days." And as we carried on this conversation, I could see in this old man's face these unbelievably sky blue eyes. He just looked through me as we spoke, and he talked to me about people's expectations of miracles and people's expectations of what they think. And he started to describe a few things to me that were very interesting. He said, "Do you know why buildings have gargoyles? Do you know why we put jack-o'-lanterns out on Halloween? Do you know why we do these things? It's because it's offensive to the dark side. These terrifying things are offensive to them because they believe they're beautiful." Huh. And what does it say in the Bible? That they're going to come to us as beings of light, as beautiful angelic. That's what people's perception of angels are. And he said, "And the true angels that are fighting by your side every day look nothing like that." And he went on to just describe to me and tell me that he is one of my guardian angels. And that every scar that I see is from all of the battles that he's had on my behalf and the people that he's been in charge of before.
You believe that?
I did. I had a hard time as we were talking, and I remember having that moment in the dream of, is this a dream? This is so wildly believable. This is so real. And he was the emotion and the pathos from him was beautiful. There was no sense like he was trying to misdirect me. He wasn't trying to tell me something negative, but he was just trying to give me the idea of what people look for is not what they always get. There's a great scene in a silly 80s movie, George, called The Man with Two Brains with Steve Martin. Do you remember that movie?
I remember the movie. Yeah.
There's a scene in that movie, George, where Steve Martin is about to marry Kathleen Turner's character. His wife, who he loved very much, had passed away, and he's still very much in love with her, but he wants her permission. He wants to know that it's okay with her to marry Kathleen Turner, and he's standing there in front of this gorgeous painting over his fireplace, and he looks up and he says, "Darling, I'm going to marry this woman, but I need to know if it's okay with you. Give me a sign, any sign." And the painting begins to spin, and the candelabras are shaking, and books are flying off the shelf, and you hear, "No, no, no." And then when it's all stopped, he reaches up and takes the picture off the wall, and he goes, "Well, I'm just going to put you in the closet until you're ready to give me the sign." And that spoke very profoundly to me to what this man was saying, is that people want the lightning bolt from heaven. They expect the signs to come the way they want them. And that true miracles happen around us on a daily basis. And it's how we look at things is where we're going to find the magic and the miracles of life. And he said, start asking for miracles, but be aware of them. Look for them, and you will see them. And I had after that was driving from Illinois, and this was outside of the dream, this isn't reality. As I'm driving to Illinois from Winona, Minnesota, with my son in the car, Cliff, we were talking about miracles, and he was about 8 or 9 years old. And he said, but miracles don't ever happen to people like us, Dad. And I said, ask for a miracle right now. And he said, okay, God, show me a miracle. And I said, well, but let's be precise so that we know that it happens, because you know, we've got a long drive ahead of us. How about show us a miracle in the next 10 miles? And he laughed and said, okay, Dad. And he said, show us a miracle in the next 10 miles. And George, as we hit the 9.5 mile mark, I stopped the car. And I told my son, I said, do you see a miracle? And he said, no, Dad. And I go, look around you, son. Do you see a miracle? And he said, no, I don't know what you're talking about. And I said, look right in front of our car. And there on the road from Winona to Minnesota or to Chicago, there on the side of the road in a crack in the pavement stood a 6-foot-tall sunflower. No other sunflowers anywhere to be seen.
It is.
And there, meaning that that seed had to have been dropped perfectly. There had to be the right amount of dirt, moisture, and sunlight. And then on the side of a busy highway, nobody was ever to hit that to grow a 5-6-foot-tall sunflower. I said, you ask for it, and at the 10-mile mark, here we sit, son, looking at a miracle when there's no other piece like this around. And look at how beautiful and unscathed this flower is. And once you start opening up and noticing these things, George, it's amazing to me how many true miracles and things I've seen happen in my life. And that, to me, has been a very exciting faction. Now, I've wondered with my experience with my grandfather that I had the lucid dream when I felt, when I went to hug him and there was this strong vibrational blast of hot air. And when I felt the hands underneath my armpits again, it was like a strong vibrational pull. And at the end of this lucid dream with the angel, he reached forward and grabbed my hands. And when he touched me, it was that same forceful vibrational air. And he said, remember this feeling. And I started to wonder, do the encounters we have with our dead loved ones, maybe we do go on to the next level, George. Maybe that's our part. We're no longer needed here. We're able to go on. But if we needed to take a message, who best would we take it from? If I appeared over your bed tonight, George, in a long white robe with a halo over my head and wings and said, George, don't go to Applebee's Friday. It's going to be bad. You might think, wow, I've got to stop listening to Darkness Radio at night because it's getting in my head.
I'd probably say I should have given David an extra hour on the show.
Exactly. But if I came to you in the visage of somebody you knew and loved and trusted, and they said, George, don't go to Applebee's this Friday, and then Thursday afternoon, your producer says, hey, George, let's go over to Applebee's, you're probably going to be more reticent and reluctant to make that move, and maybe for a good reason. Maybe we take the messages and we take these things from our loved ones, and they appear in these forms. And other people I've talked to that have had angel encounters when they've been touched by an angel, their stories are that they feel vibrational, warm energy. And that, to me, has been a really intriguing part of my growing in this field of what I think I know and then begins to turn into something else. So I often wonder if those experiences we have with the loved ones are nothing more than an angelic giving us what we need to know, but taking the look of somebody that we would trust and love.
David, when we come back, let's talk about possession, and also we'll take phone calls, stories, and questions. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment with David Schrader and you on Coast to Coast AM.